Our next speaker is Bob, who you all know is one of our former chairmen and former editors of PhilSoc, and he's going to be talking about Tesoro. Thank you, Bob.
Right, warning, everything I'm going to say is going to be about language and logic. I have no pretensions to know anything about the universe at all, or real things. And before I get down to the main talk, a little hors d'oeuvre, as it told me, on the abstract. It's a given of human experience that things appear to happen in order. Some things happen after other things, and yet other things happen after them. And the most reasonable explanation for this experience is that things do in fact happen after other things, and we notice the fact. And the whole area of before and after is called time. One of those abstract nouns that, in the words of Philip Larkin, brings the priest and the doctor in their long coats running over the fields. And as soon as we invent an abstract noun like time, mind, the good, people assume it must refer to some kind of non-physical entity, or even physical entity, and a deluge of nonsense can be unleashed. Time flows, events pass from future to now, the now moves through time. And just as with mind and those other abstract nouns, we could abolish the word time from the language altogether, and still say all meaningful sentences we want to without using the word or itself or any synonym of it. So I intend to talk about my chosen topic without once using the word time from here on in. Don't bother to check, because I've used the checker to make sure it's not there. Right, now let's get down to business. The big subject is, my subject is statements about the future. Can they be true now? Just to clear away two possible ambiguities before I start. First of all, when I talk about statements, I'm referring only to unambiguous ones, where there's no doubt about what they mean. And second, I'm ignoring here the question of whether the world is deterministic. Everything I say is meant to apply to statements made in any kind of world, whether it's fully deterministic, totally random, or somewhere in between. The problem was first flagged up by Aristotle, whose general assumption was that any statement must be either true or false, whether it's about the past, present, or future. He also recognized that if something is the case, then the statement that it is the case must be true. And that if a statement that something is the case is true, then that something must be the case. And to put that in terms of modern logic, which is also, I think, on your handout, if you like modern logic, where P means a proposition, and I'll use N to mean it is necessary that, and T to mean it is true that. It is a necessary truth that if P, then it is true that P. That one. And it is also a necessary truth that if it is true that P, then P. It's simply contradictory for it to be false that P, and yet P, or vice versa. And that sounds perfectly obvious. But when you apply that to statements about the future, for example, there will be a sea battle tomorrow, Aristotle's example, you run into problems. Now, as we don't have many sea battles nowadays, I'll take as my model statement, Donald Trump will win a second term. And as I said earlier, we've assumed that we know exactly what that means. Now, suppose I say, as I just did, Trump will win a second term. Is what I say true? Well, the first thing to be clear about is that we don't know at the moment, and almost certainly can't. But if we wait until November 2020, we'll find out. And then we'll be able to say if my statement was true. Fair enough. But suppose it turns out, then, that my statement was true. That means it's true now, even if there is no way of our knowing it now. Yet, if it is true now, it follows by this necessary entailment that Trump will win a second term. And if it is false, then it follows by necessary entailment that Trump will not win a second term. Now remember, it's a necessary truth, but if it is true that P, then P. Now Aristotle didn't like that. He believed that what happens tomorrow, or in 2020, is not yet determined in the way that what happened yesterday is already settled. Yet if the statement, Trump will win a second term, is already true, then it seems to be settled already that Trump will win a second term. And if it is false, it seems to be settled already that he won't. Yet, what happens if we say that neither the sentence nor its denial is true? Well, if it is not true that Trump will win a second term, then the statement that he will must be false. In which case, the sentence saying that he will not win a second term will be true. So it seems that both sentences can't be false at the same time. That's the law of excluded middle. What if both sentences are true? That is clearly absurd, as the law of contradiction does not allow that Trump both is going to win a second term and is not going to. Now, how Aristotle solves this problem is anybody's guess. Ever since his day, philosophers have been trying to do two things. First of all, work out what Aristotle's solution was, which I'm not going to do here, but you can read all about it in the 2014 review. And secondly, to come up with an answer to the problem he raised. Do we have to assume different rules for statements about the future from those we use to talk about the past and present? Now, for some medieval philosophers, the problem was more than just a fascinating problem or puzzle. If you believe that God is omniscient, all-knowing, then he must know the truth value, that means whether it's true or false, the truth value of every statement that could ever be made, including statements about the future. Now suppose I have to make some great moral choice tomorrow, for which presumably I'll be held to account on the day of judgment. He already knows what choice I'll make. And where does that leave my free will, my responsibility for my decisions? Can I plead before the court that my decision was already settled in advance? In fact, the dilemma does not need God or anyone else to know what will happen in the future. It merely requires, as Aristotle makes clear, that the statement X will happen is true, and was true 10,000 years ago, even if no one actually said it. Now, before I get on to possible solutions, one idea that seems to me to muddy the waters is the long-held belief that because events in the past have already happened, by definition, they must in some sense be necessarily true. Now, there is a sense in which they're historically settled, and so inescapable and unpreventable, unless you watch Terminator. In this respect, there's an obvious contrast with events of the future which have not yet taken place, and so any given possible event is still escapable, preventable, and certainly not inevitable. And that prompts some philosophers to believe that the rules about future statements must be different from those about past statements. But, consider. First of all, any necessity we attribute to the past is by no means logical necessity. If we take a past event at random, say the eruption of Vesuvius in 79 AD, it is not a logical truth that it happened. If we didn't know it had happened, we could not work it out by analysis of the meaning of the words. It is a contingent truth, since it depends on whether a certain event in the world did or did not happen. Assuming Vesuvius did erupt then, the statement that it did is true. If we find out that it did not erupt at all, then the statement is false. All that is logically necessary is the logical truth that if it happened, then it happened. Or if it happened, then the statement that it happened is true. Or if the statement that it happened is true, then it happened. That necessity applies equally to the future, or indeed to any statement about anything whenever it is made. It has no bearing whatever on whether the statement's truth is contingent or necessary. Unfortunately, Aristotle, even though he does occasionally acknowledge the difference between logical necessity and other kinds, does not always keep the distinction in mind. There are certain events he regards as necessary, for instance, the movement of the planets, the sun rising in the morning, because the universe is made that way. They contrast with events in our bit of the world where what happens depends on choices we make and other unpredictable causes. Now, he's not always clear, probably even in his own mind, whether he's talking about logical necessity or some other kind. And this looseness has infected other later philosophers who see statements about the future as differing somehow in a logical way from statements about the past, as you'll now see from some of the attempted solutions coming up. Now, one attempt at a solution is to argue that some statements are true at one moment but not at another. Now, it might seem obvious that if a statement is true, it is true forever, allowing for the tense difference depending on when it's made. So, if the statement, Trump will win a second term in 2020, is true now, it was true 10 or even 10,000 years ago, and it will be true in 10 years from now, 2028, that he was going to win in 2020. Some, including the philosopher C.S. Peirce, want statements to be capable of being true or false at different moments. At different times, originally, because I had to cut that out. So, insofar as the future is not yet fixed, that means excluding necessary truths like 2 plus 2 will equal 4, all statements about events going to happen are false at the moment, but may become true if and when the relevant event has happened. Yet to say that the statement Trump will win made now is false simply because it is about the future seems perverse, although cheerful, until you realise that Trump will not win is also false. Now, another strategy also attributed to Aristotle, and he clearly rejects it at least one point in his argument, is to deny the law of excluded middle. In other words, some deny that every clearly expressed statement has to be either true or false. In particular, a statement about an event in the future that may or may not happen does not have to be either true or false. You still have to accept as true the claim that Trump either will or will not win a second term in 2020. But we need not accept that the statement, Trump will win a second term, is either true or false. It may be somewhere in between. This introduces the notion of trivalent logic. That's a system where there are no longer two possible truth values, true and false, but three, true, false, and indeterminate. Or as one might write it in digital form, 1, 0, and 1/2. The idea is that true statements about the present and past have the truth value 1, or true. False statements about the present and past have the truth value 0, or false, just as normal. But any statements about the future have truth value of apart or indeterminate. Now, the whole edifice of symbolic logic surrounding this is incredibly complicated, and the originators of this new system, or was new at the time, a group of Polish logicians in the 1920s and 30s, of whom the leader was Jan Łukasiewicz, some pronunciation like that, and they had to work out all the truth tables to go with it. Now, one big stumbling block to this view, I'll show you, is that according to these truth tables, if the truth value of P is a half, and the truth value of Q is not that there, the truth value of Q is a half, then the truth value of P or Q is also a half. And so, if the truth value of P is a half indeterminate, and the truth value of not P, as it's false, is also indeterminate, then the value of P or not P is a half indeterminate. Now, in plain English, if the statement Trump will win a second term is indeterminate, and the statement Trump will not win a second term is also indeterminate, then the statement either Trump will win a second term or he will not win a second term is also indeterminate. Not only Aristotle, but also common sense insists that that last sentence is simply true. Surely it must be the case, a necessary truth in fact, that Trump either will or will not win a second term. So, two approaches to the problem of future statements are, first of all, to claim that statements, though at any moment either true or false, may have different truth values at different moments. And secondly, to propose a trivalent system where there is a truth value intermediate between true and false. Now, a recent suggestion, which I think combines these two approaches, is that of John McFarlane. He is worried that we have two intuitions about future statements which are incompatible. On the one hand, it seems obvious that anybody who said 5 years ago that the Philsoc would have a weekend meeting in Trier 5 years later was making a statement that, as we now know, was true. On the other hand, it also seems hard, for some people, to accept that the statement Trump will win a second term can possibly be true now because the future is open. So he proposes the truth of a statement may depend on context. There is a sense in which it does already. When someone says, it's Saturday today, that statement will be true if uttered on a Saturday, and false if uttered on any other day. We have to assume that in the statement, it's Saturday today, the word today refers to the 17th of November 2018 AD. And similarly with personal pronouns, I am Bob Stone is true only if I, the utterer, is in fact Bob Stone. This is all straightforward stuff. And he calls this utterance contextuality. And by using this, even though you've never heard of the term, we manage quite well in ordinary life to cope with these theoretically ambiguous sentences. What McFarlane introduces is the concept of assessment contextuality. So when someone makes a statement about the future, at the moment she makes it, there is no way of assessing whether it is true or false. So at that moment, it is neither. For example, the statement made 5 years ago that there would be a Philsoc meeting in Trier 5 years from then was neither true nor false at the moment it was made, because at that moment, it was impossible to assess its truth value. But today, in our position of superior knowledge, we can definitively assess that statement as true. So from the assessment context of the present moment, that statement is true. Its truth value has in fact changed from being neither true nor false to being true. Now this is quite an ingenious device, and in fact the paper in which it appears won the Philosophical Quarterly Essay Prize for 2002. But, as McFarlane acknowledges, it does give violence to another intuition, namely that if a statement referring to a particular fact is true, it is always true. Its truth value cannot change because of circumstances. Now, what we can all agree is that anyone saying 5 years ago that this meeting would take place was making a lucky guess, that she could not possibly have had any good reason for saying it, and she did not know that it was true. But that is a point about her epistemic virtue, not about simple truth. The statement she made was nonetheless true. Now, another problem that Farlam has, his idea would have to apply equally to those statements about the past whose truth is unknown. We don't know, for example, whether Vesuvius erupted on August the 24th, 79 AD, as the textbooks say, or on October the 24th, as modern scholars are more likely to believe. Yet to say that the statement Vesuvius erupted on August the 24th is neither true nor false now, because our assessment context makes it impossible to know, seems perverse. In fact, McFarlane, like Peirce, makes quite a thing about the person using the statement, uttering the statement, her state of knowledge, her intention in making the statement, her ability to justify it. Yet, as Aristotle implies with his mention of a statement about today's sea battle 10,000 years ago, tomorrow's sea battle rather, 10,000 years ago, it is not the person who uttered the statement that counts, but the statement itself. Imagine an epoch in the future when all conscious beings have died out, but computers still roam the landscape, and on occasion to generate statements about the future. Although there is no one around to assess their truth value, it seems obvious that the statements made will be either true or false. Now the moment has come for what I think. This highly professional drawing will show you. This is one way in which we can visualize the future, is the branching future diagram. It's completely unimportant how you draw the branches. This was apparently suggested by Saul Kripke when he was 17. At any moment, the situation may develop in a number of ways, and the way it does develop may itself branch off into any number of ways, each of which, etc., etc. Now, for the diagram to be accurate, it would have to be impossibly complex. As it stands, it suggests that there are only two possible things that could happen next at any moment, whereas in reality, there's probably an infinite number. But you get the gist. All the branches you see are possible courses of events, but we know that only one of those myriad courses will materialize.
I'm going backwards. Right.
What you can't see is that that line there is coloured red. Shame about that, but it is. You could draw a thin red line along one course, and that would signify that that course was actually going to happen. And this is, in fact, the model suggested by some recent philosophers, called the thin red line. Of course, we don't know now which course should be coloured red, but we do know, I think, that one of those courses is the one that will actually materialise and should be coloured. Now, one might think that the future is different from the past in this respect. Whereas the future may branch out in any direction, there's just one line that represents the course of events leading up to the present. But, look at this. It has the past as a mirror image of the future. Now, when Chief Inspector Morse finds the body of Dr. Black in Ruby House, he has to decide who killed the victim. Was it Professor Plum, the Reverend Green, Mrs. Peacock? And how did she kill him? With the revolver, the lead pipe, the candlestick? In his mind, all these combinations, and in the game of Cluedo, which involves six suspects, six weapons, and nine possible rooms, they amount to 324, They form a series of branching lines that finish up at the trunk, or rather the body. Now, when he solves the case, I don't know if you can see the red again, red and then down there as well, new red image. When he solves the case, he mentally colours one of those branches red. And here's the solution, again, one of each. Now, why can we not see the two branching systems for past and future as symmetrical? Well, here are 8 reasons why we can. First of all, in each case there are infinitely many possible ways in which things might have led up to the present or may be about to develop from this point on. But there is only one actual way in which things have led here, and there is only one actual way in which things will proceed from here. Now, second point, the statement that Colonel must have done it with the dagger in the library is contingently true or false, depending on whether he did it or not. It is not a necessary truth that he did, or a necessary truth that he didn't. Similarly, the statement that Trump will win a second term is contingently true or false, depending on whether he will win a second term. It is not a necessary truth that he will, or a necessary truth that he won't. Thirdly, it is a necessary truth that Colonel Mustard either did or did not do the murder, and it is a necessary truth that Trump either will or will not win a second term. That's the law of excluded middle. Fourth, it is a necessary truth that if Colonel Mustard, I've got these out of order here, it is a necessary truth that if Colonel Mustard did the murder, then Colonel Mustard did the murder. Similarly, it is a necessary truth that if Trump will win a second term, then Trump will win a second term. Sorry, I've got precisely the right order, actually. Some loss of confidence. Fifthly, it is a necessary truth that, first, if it is true that Colonel Mustard did the murder, then Colonel Mustard did the murder. And it is necessary truth that if it is true that Trump will win a second term, then Trump will win a second term. Sixth, Chief Inspector Morse does not yet know whether Colonel Mustard did the murder, and we do not yet know whether Trump will win a second term. Seventh, if it turns out that Colonel Mustard did the murder, the fact that the truth of the statement that he did it logically entails that he did it obviously does not imply that the truth of that statement is the cause of his having done the murder. Similarly, if it turns out that Trump gets a second term, the fact that the truth of my statement that he will do it logically entails that he will does not imply that the truth of my statement, if it's true, the truth of my statement was the cause of his winning the second term. Logical entailment is not causation. And finally, you can't change the past, obviously. Nor can you change the future. If you did, it wouldn't have been the future. And the change you wrought was the real future. Now, from this symmetry, we can see that the problems raised about future statements are no more problems for the future than for the past. Our ignorance of the future is greater than our ignorance of the past, only in degree. The many possibilities of the future are mirrored by the many possible lines in the past that might have led up to the present. Truths about the past are just as contingent as those about the future. The logical connection between future states of affairs and true statements about them is exactly the same for past states of affairs. There is no hint of a state of affairs, past or future, being caused by the truth of a statement about it. And 4 fallacies, the 3 up on the board, these are the 3 minor ones, I think they underlie some of the solutions. First of all, the fallacy that logical entailment is a kind of cause, so, discussed just now. Secondly, the idea that truth value has something to do with knowledge. And thirdly, because the state of mind of the maker of a statement has something to do with its truth value. But there's one serious extra fallacy that Aristotle appears to commit, and which needs to be nailed once and for all here in Trier in 2018. We all agree that it is a necessary truth that if P, then P. Now, a loose way of saying that would be to say, if P, then necessarily P. But that might give the idea that the second P, after the word necessarily, is therefore a necessary truth. The fact that the word necessarily comes next to P makes P the necessary truth. But of course, what is necessary is not P, but the entailment of P by P. It is necessary that if P, then P. This is perhaps slightly easier to keep in the head if written out in symbols. You may disagree, but anyway, here they are. It is necessary that P entails P is not the same as P entails that it's necessary that P. And similarly, down here, it is necessary that the truth of P entails P. If P is true, P. That's not the same, if P is true, then P is necessary. Looks blindingly obvious in algebraic looking terms to me. If it doesn't, well, I have to go with what I said in fully. So when I say it is a necessary truth that if it is true that Trump will win a second term, Trump will win a second term, I do not imply that if it is true that Trump will win, then it is a necessary truth that he will win. The only necessity is the logical connection between his winning and its being true that he will. His winning is contingent on what happens in America in the next 2 years. It seems to me that the whole problem that is perceived about future statements, that they somehow make the future necessary or fixed when we believe it's contingent, is based on a failure to spot that fallacy. Thank heavens I was born for this moment. Now, to summarise, statements can be divided into these categories. True or false, necessary or contingent, known or unknown, past, present or future. And these categories are entirely independent of each other, and there is no reason why a statement about the future should not be simply true or false, without implying anything about its status in any of the other three categories. There is, in short, no problem with statements about the future being true or false. Doris Day was right, que sera, sera, what will be, and if it turns out in November 2020 that I was making a true statement now when I say Trump will win a second term, don't blame me. I didn't make it inevitable, it wasn't my fault. Thank you.
Anthony, question
for Matthew. Well, I'm all of a puzzle. I'll just sort of jot it down as you were making this presentation. Do you think it's important to define what you mean by statement?
Well, yes.
By which I mean, there are a number of different definitions. If a statement is defined as a presented fact, then by definition, a statement about the future must be invalid. So it's an invalid statement, right, which may or may not be true at some point in the future.
Why is it
invalid? You know that.
Sorry, why is it invalid?
Because it can't be. How can you have a fact about the future?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We don't know what the fact is. If for instance, Trump's going to win, then that's a fact about the future. We don't know the future. We will do in 2 years' time. We'll know that when I said we will win, that's a fact.
It's a future, right?
Yes.
Which then makes it very difficult to basically understand the line that fact will either be true or false. You don't know now whether it is.
We don't know now whether the fact will be true or false. Yeah. We don't know whether it's a fact. Just as we don't know whether the statement that Vesuvius erupted in August is a fact or not. We may one day find out.
and my car. I'm saying there's no real distinction between the statements about the two statements, except that one happens to be in the past, the other happens to be in the future. When I say a statement, I had put in a bit at the beginning saying I'm going to use the word statement, sentence, proposition more or less interchangeably, because it doesn't bother me which one I'm using. As long as no one... I think a sentence might have been a better thing. It doesn't have to be stated by somebody.
Well, you stated admirably, I think, in this seminar on time, you're not mentioning time at all.
You checked, did you?
but nor did you mention the word probability. Now, if I say something like the law of non-contradiction will apply in 2028, then I think through logical intelligence that of necessity that must be true, because it's one of these logical laws that we must have
the
truth.
Right.
But if I say something about Trump, it is not a matter of logic, it's a matter of fact. And I think your point about mysterious is excellent, because we can't have absolute certainty about the past, so why should we make a different sort of proposition about the future? But all contingent truths are probabilities. Is never subject to 100% being proved true. You just mentioned that Vesuvius is proved to be one day and another day. But is it muddy in the waters that we're talking about probability rather than truth? We will continue to say it.
Well, I can see that if you want to know how probable is it that a certain statement is true, then there's an answer. I mean, what's the probability of Vesuvius having erupted in October? Well, somebody might think that's 75%, or whatever you say, 0.75. What's the probability of Trump getting a second term? I don't know, 0.5 or something. Well, let's say 0.4, let's be cheap. 0.4. That's how we use probability. Just how likely are we to believe that statement is true or false? But I don't think it's a substitute for the words true and false.
We lack certainty.
But that's an epistemic point, though, isn't it?
Sorry?
That's an epistemic point. That's a point about the state of mind. I mean, I'm pretty certain that I had coffee for breakfast. I mean, my memory may be false, but I mean, I was 99.9% probability that I had coffee for breakfast in my own mind. Obviously, either it's 100% certain that I did, or 0%, depending on whether I had it or not. And similarly, whether Trump will win the election, it will win a second term, is either 100% or 0% in a sense of what will happen. But our entitlement to believe that he will is what the probability is, I think. We might say, well, looking at the evidence, the probability is about 0.4. But I don't say that interferes with the notion of truth. See what I mean?
Yes, it's just that, you see, Trump could win his next election. And then it might be proved that he needs to be disabused of winning, because the evidence shows that he was corruptly influenced in the election. So he comes unelected. So it's certain and true. Ceases to be so. Because all things about the world depend upon the facts of the matter.
Yeah.
When I change things, if the facts change, I change my mind. And
the facts don't change.
It's contingent upon the facts and continuing.
I think, going back to the very first slide I put up for the title, I'm assuming that all statements are unambiguous. So, of course, in almost any statement you like to make, when you say, will Trump win a second term, let's assume we know exactly what that means, and that if he does, you know, and there won't be any complications, of course there could be. But that's not really relevant to the point I'm making, the probability of it. I don't think facts could change. One fact is a fact.
Yeah, as you're going through, I was thinking of Alan's presentation earlier on, Well, no, I just wondered. It yielded in a little assumption at the top there that Deborah's multiverse was correct. Presumably, it would turn all your future branches red, not just the one you went through.
Yes, we certainly.
Could we then say that it is true that Trump both will and will not, a bit like Schrodinger's cat, he will and will not become president?
I think we have to do a spot of indexicality there. I think we can say that in the reality that I'm talking about, or in one reality, Trump will win. And in another line of reality, another thread, he will not win.
But so only when we reach that branch and we look back, we kind of look at it that. But from this one, they're both in the future, and they both will happen.
Yes,
well, it's just because of the branches we can go down.
We'd have to say that he both will win in one world and will not win in another world. So you could say the law of contradiction only applies within a particular reality. That's all. The trouble with it is there's no way of disproving Everett, is there? Because the world would appear exactly as it is if he's right. And if he's wrong.
Sure. Sure. Greenfield has been mostly addressed on the subject of probability. And I can accept that if we move forward a couple of years' time, we will know the truth or falsity of the fact that Trump has or has not won. But if we're starting to address problems now and look into the future, your trees and the detection of crime, then I think you must have a probability which changed some of the argument. The analysis of information is vague enough to prevent you assigning truth or false to things that may or may not happen. Once they have happened, you can ensure that. But if you've got to take action on a terrorist warning of a bomb, you have to assess probability from the moment you get that information.
Yeah.
You have to analyse the paths. No. You don't have one red line until you've walked the whole of that red line.
Yes.
There are probabilities on each branch.
Absolutely.
And so you deal with truth and likelihood together as partners. I cannot see that one should remain bound by this truth or false for future events until it's post facto.
But you're quite right. I mean, I wouldn't. If you say, for instance, Trump will win, it would be stupid for anybody to just take it that they're certain that Trump will win. And obviously, if you want to know whether he's going to win or not and do something about it, you have to look at the probabilities and what are we going to do about it to stop him winning or cause him to win if you like him, and so on. But that doesn't really alter the fact that he's either going to win or he isn't.
Well, and if he doesn't run,
he
won't win.
Yes.
But he will not have competed to allow him to win, so you cannot say he hasn't won.
No, but I can say that he will not win a second term. Or he will not.
You can say he cannot lose it.
No, sorry, you can say he will not win a second term, or he will win a second term.
But it comes back to that bit with the God argument, the theological argument, that the future, one could argue, I think the medieval theologians did, that God knows everything for the future, knows what your choice will be. You have freedom of choice. He just knows what it is. So he cannot be blamed. Dear, you knew all about that. Yeah, but I didn't make the choice.
Well, there are two things.
So there's an aspect there of probability.
If I was William of Ockham or somebody arguing about this, I would say there are two possibilities. One is possibly, I'm not sure about it, possibly the notion of omniscience is just logically impossible. But secondly, it could be that the universe is completely determined. So for reasons nothing to do with what I've been saying, it is actually already determined by the past and the laws of the universe that Trump will win. And God, being outside the universe and unable to interfere in it, can somehow predict this because he's super clever. But then that doesn't really change anything. It's just that the world is deterministic, which is a fact about the world. But I'm trying to establish what the notion of truth and falsehood, which doesn't imply determinism. That imagine a completely random world, it's still, it's either true now that Trump will win the second term, or it's not true now that Trump will win the second term. If God knows what's going to happen in a world of chance. Well, he just can't. I mean, that just showed one of the proofs of the impossibility of the normal concept of God. Step all that way, then.
No, that's the first one. I think that without consideration of probability, some of the arguments are too, I suppose, prescriptive. It restricts the argument space. You know, it's either true or it's not true. No, there is a thing. The cat either is dead or alive. Maybe it doesn't exist. That's the third condition.
That's not true, or
the statement cannot be decided.
In the case of the cat being alive or dead, yes, there are alternatives. But in the case of Trump will win a second term or Trump will not win a second term, there is no alternative.
That there is no person called Trump beyond tomorrow.
Well, in that case, he won't win a second term.
True, but it is not. Is that true? Is that false?
I can see what you mean about probabilities. Yeah, the probabilities are fine for discussing whether or how likely it is that this or that statement is true, but it doesn't alter the logic of the truth or falsehood of the statement. It just means our state of mind is what we're talking about here. How are we entitled to be certain that this statement is true? And of course we're not. Even things like the sun will rise tomorrow, on the basis of the evidence, we're pretty entitled. I mean, we're entitled to be 99.999% sure that it will. Whereas we're only sort of 0.4% entitled, 0.4% entitled to believe that Trump will win. But I don't think that alters the logic of true and false.
I won't proceed the argument. I'm not convinced.
We've got a lot of time left.
Darren, any other questions?
Let's go.
Well, this may be a very naive question for you.
Socratic.
But what I'm trying to say is, if another unforeseen reality affects the reality, such as Trump will win a second term, how do we work this, because on the day that Trump is about to win his second term, he doesn't, because there's been a secret ballot at the Vatican, and he's offered the job of Pope at Texas. Now, he's won, but he hasn't, because he doesn't take it.
I think, again, you're going back to the very first slide I showed. If it is... If the statement Trump will win a second term can be shown to be not entirely clear, then I'll just use a different sentence.
I'm talking about a second reality affecting that reality.
See, just another thing happens, which, so Trump's just on the point of winning a second term. I suppose you could say, well, even if he doesn't take it up, he's won the second term. You know, I might win the lottery, but not bother to collect the winning. He may win a second term and drop dead on the spot. I think we'd still say he's won a second term, even if he doesn't take it up. Or if we wouldn't, if that meant that he hadn't won a second term, then it would have been false to say he will win a second term.
Okay.
I think I'd take one or the other.
And we've now come to the end of our morning session, so can we just very quickly thank you. Thank you.